Three, here we are, podcast, the If It Be Your Will podcast. I'm not reaching too far from me. I am joined by Emmy Knight of Strawberry Runners, who's just down in New York State. We're almost neighboring right now. Emmy, thanks so much for hopping on and joining me and talking a little bit about your musical history and journey.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So as I kind of get prepared for these, I always kind of like to know your backstory a bit, and I fell upon this really cool interview that you did where you talked about attending shows when you're like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
In Madison, Indiana.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Jeez, I know that brings you back. And what popped out at me is, first of all, such a young age going to shows and kind of like already having that interest. I think I was still playing with G.I. Joes at the time. What was it about music at that young age that was so captivating for you that you needed to go and listen and hear what it was all about?
Honestly, I was obsessed with music since I was a kid. I was like always just like trying to make up songs. My dad would make up songs all the time when I was a kid, when we were like driving together. I went to Catholic school, so there was like Catholic church happening a lot on the weekend and during the week. So I heard all of those hymns like multiple times a week. I don't know. I just feel like I was always singing. And when I got a little older, I didn't really feel like I fit into the world of Catholic school, and I found out about these shows that were happening in my town, and I had just gotten a guitar, and I had gotten my first guitar. I was like relearning how to play. To backtrack a little bit, I did learn to play guitar when I was 7, but then I didn't have a guitar, so got my first guitar and started writing songs and found out about the shows and was just like, I don't know. I just wanted to be part of what was happening and see something different than my school that made me feel like a weirdo, like an outsider and like a sinner. and I was, you know, I just was hanging out with the other sinners and looking for trouble, but also kind of looking for truth in the music and
absolutely
the community.
What were some of those early shows or the musicians or, you know, bands that touched you, that grabbed you and were like, if they can do it, I can do this. Like I relate to them. Do you remember those first kind of shows that you attended where that kind of started clicking?
Yeah, absolutely. 'Cause it didn't always click. Like there were a lot of shows where I was just like standing there and like, why am I here? Like this music hurts my ears and everybody's being obnoxious and kind of kicking each other and running around and moshing and stuff. But like, then, you know, there were some other songwriters that were in my town and like, some folks who ended up becoming friends of mine and collaborators. But my friend Daniel Gruner, was kind of the first person whose music I heard and was like, oh, this is actually meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. And this person is doing something that, you know, I didn't think was possible, but now I can like, through seeing what he's doing, I can like find, I don't know, like a pathway towards something that would be like, give me an opportunity to like grow and like, you know, become this person that, you know, I want to be. So like Daniel was someone, and my friend Cheryl, she's still living in my hometown, or she's still around my hometown and like still making music and just like kicking ass. And I love that. There was this old guy that was in the scene, and we would do like open mics and like have this monthly show. Maybe it was weekly at a nightclub, and his name was Roy Gentry, and he's this big old man with like a giant white beard and long white hair, and he often wore like a cowboy hat, I think, and like he had some country songs that were just funny and goofy, and he just made me feel, he helped me book my first show. Yeah, I don't know, just like the townies and the people who are like still like somewhat connected to music in other places and like touring and stuff.
So good community of musicians. You felt supported. You must have, because at 17, you're out on your first tour. And I read that when you were going to these shows at you know, 12, 13, that you were quite shy and you were kind of just there listening and maybe not engaging as you know, all the rest of the people that were there or whatnot. What happened from going to these shows and kind of being a little bit maybe on the outside, I don't know if that's an accurate description, you'll fill in the words for that, to booking this first tour? Like, what was that? What happened in those years?
That is a really good question. So I definitely grew up a lot. I had to make a really tough decision when I was 15. And this is going to get kind of like serious and personal pretty quickly. But so my dad and my parents were divorced when I was younger. And when I was 15, because of the way my dad treated me, I decided I didn't want to visit him anymore. I didn't want to see him. So I like stopped the visitation with him. And I think that kind of having to make a decision like that, like cutting off ties with a parent, with, you know, this like core family member and this huge part of my identity, gave me this opportunity to like look at my life and my future and who I was and make more of a, like an intentional decision to be, you know, who I wanted to be. Like growing up, I was very like ashamed of my family and my life, and I like with my friends, like I would tell a lot of lies about where I came from and you know what my family was like and what, you know, what the reality of my life was. And when I was 15, I decided to like come clean about a lot of those lies to my best friend, and I just kind of spilled it all out and was like, look, this is what it's really like. And, you know, I'm not going to see my dad anymore. And like, these things are like, you're going to see the reality of like what my life is like. And, you know, I don't want to live like pretending to be someone else anymore. I don't want to hide away from the world. I want to like figure out who I am. And I also want to be able to share that with people. So yeah, that was like a pivotal moment in my childhood.
Yeah. Is that when you started to write songs? I mean, like, was that a period where most of this where your songwriting started to kind of release a little bit?
Yeah, I was 15 when I wrote most of the songs that I ended up like recording the next year. But yeah, I started writing a little before that. And I think that writing really gave me a place to process a lot of the things that, I was dealing with and trying to learn, you know. It helped me, like it really helped me grow a lot.
So. Absolutely. Well, I mean, what was that first tour at 17? I mean, those early years seem to have influenced a lot of your music. And now you're this shy girl that's going now on to stage saying, hello, here I am.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I just see bravery. I see tremendous amount of reflection and a will to push these boundaries. Not only, like even to the music that you're releasing now, your self-titled album that is your latest record. I mean, there's so much power in there. Where did you find all this? Like that first show, I'm really curious about that first tour. What did it feel like, and how did that evolve?
Well, I felt really lucky because that whole year, or a whole couple of years leading up to that tour, I worked really closely with my friend Daniel, who I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And like we were playing shows around town all the time. We were organizing this open mic night weekly. We were, you know, playing shows in the neighboring town, and he helped me record my first little record. It was like a 5-song EP, and it was really, really cool. One of the most exciting things about my teenage years was like, you know, recording that. And I just felt so proud. I felt like I had something to show the world. And, you know, it was, it's funny. I was 16 and I didn't even really know Daniel yet, but I knew that he went to the library a lot. And so did I. So I went up to him and was like, at the library one day, I was like, "Hey, so I heard that you went on tour. Like, how did you do that? And could you show me how?" And so he's like, "Oh God," you know, he's a little older. He's like, "I don't know about this." But then he was like, "Okay, you know what? If we're going to do this, like, let's do some shows around town. Let's like make a CD for you. And then yeah, we can do a tour." So we ended up touring like a year later in the summer, going around the Midwest a little bit. We went up to New York, we played in New Paltz. I think New Paltz was the first show, actually. And it was so sweet. I mean, that show kind of blew my mind. It was in a basement at some college kid's house. And I think there was the Red Sled Choir, that band played, an artist from that band. And Eric Ayotte, who I ended up being friends with later in Bloomington. But yeah, just like being at this house that was like, yeah, full of young people who were making music and making food together and laughing and had all these stupid inside jokes. And there were like Christmas lights everywhere and, you know, people sitting on the floor and like really listening to the music. Right. I was just like, this is something I want to do for the rest of my life. maybe not exactly like this, but like,
sure,
it could be exactly like this, sure, for a long time, and I'd be happy. I just loved that community. So that's kind of how it felt, was like realizing that music, it just gives people a reason to come together and open up and just
you
like
found your
be
people.
Honest.
Yeah.
I found my people, sort of. I also felt like an outsider still. I think I always have and always will in some way, but maybe I'm starting to get over that now. A little bit. But yeah, I was still shy, but I knew how to do the thing where I got up in front of people and played my songs. Like, that was something, I don't know, just like a piece of the puzzle that I'd figured out.
Great. And where do you go when you're up on stage, particularly alone? Because I find that that's kind of like the most vulnerable. You're laying your heart out, because your lyrics are quite vulnerable as well. Where do you go in your mind in that kind of a setting where it's almost vulnerability stacked on vulnerability? Like, where does your mindset have to be able to do that?
Just like in the song, I'm just there. I don't know. I'm just there with the music. It's just me and the music. And, you know, if I'm doing a really good job of being a performer, which I think I'm getting a little better at this, but I will like, it just feels like a conversation with people, like new potential friends.
Right.
I don't feel as afraid of the audience anymore as I did when I was younger.
Right.
I feel like, you know, I can understand the humanity of the people that I'm in the room with. And I, you know, I might not know these people or where they come from, but I, you know, they're here and they're listening. And so I honor that and I respect it a lot. So I want to give them the attention that they deserve too. So it's like I don't know. It feels just like a conversation.
Yeah.
At the same time as like, I'm sharing this thing that is so personal to me. So
yeah.
It's
a great, great description. Great description. And I love how your music, you have the music itself is very, you know, indie poppy, like upbeat, and then it's juxtaposed to more like struggles, questioning, reflecting. What's your process? Like, how do you go about penning a song where you start to realize, okay, I'm onto something here. I think that this is the beginning of a song that I might share with the world. What's your process for that songwriting?
You know, I actually just went through it partially last night. I was another kind of sad personal thing, but I found out yesterday that a mentor of mine passed away recently. And when I read the news, I was just kind of like, it was at the end of my day. I just gotten off work. I was a little tired, and I just felt this like blank feeling. And I knew I should be feeling something about this, because this person was a very important like person in my life. And you know, it was just like, there was a moment where I was like, I need to feel this. I need to stop what I'm doing and feel this. So I sat down with my guitar, and I had a piece of music that I've been working on, and I haven't, you know, I had some lyrics for it, didn't really like them, so I just like played through the music a bit, and as I was playing the song, it felt like this, like the music was like a scaffolding or a structure that supported this excavation that I was doing. So I was able to start feeling, and the music could just kind of hold me, right? So I just had this, I have this ability to like dig deeper into emotions when I'm playing music, when I'm hearing music. I think a lot of people can probably relate to that. When you're listening to music, it like draws out memories that may have been long lost that you put away. It's so supportive. So I guess for me, the music is the scaffolding, and then it's all there in support of digging deeper into the emotions to find like a gem of truth. Like my personal truth from my experience. So yeah.
Interesting.
That's kind of how it works for me. And it may be something sad that I'm trying to find the truth of, or it may be something that's like ecstatic or joyful or great, you know, some feeling of gratitude or something.
I've heard many musicians explain something similar, that it's and the lyrics they'll have you know, a line that they really like, and then the lyrics just start to cover that structure, like you said, the scaffolding, and it always surprises them. You know, oftentimes I hear that, I'm like surprised what comes out, and I think until we verbalize things, sometimes it's there, but it's not out in the world, and just kind of getting that out is a little bit of a release as well. It allows you to cope with things a lot better anyway.
It does feel like it's there. It's like somebody's like pitching a ball at you and you just have to catch it. You have to be ready.
Get out
of the way, I guess.
Right.
Let somebody else catch it.
So your latest record that's self-titled, tell me a little bit about that. How did that record come to be? I mean, first off, it's beautiful. I mean, I love your voice. I think it has a subtlety to it, and you understand your voice. And you let it do what it does naturally, beautifully. How did this record come to be? What was a little bit of the process behind this latest record that you put out? Is it out yet? Yes.
It is
out. Oh yeah, it came out in August, 2023.
I started writing this album. It's funny, I'm helping a friend move right now who's in a similar situation to what I was in when I was writing this album. But I was going through a breakup, and I had just moved to Philly, and kind of felt like my life was wrecked, you know? And then things continued to pile on with like things that were happening with my family and some painful stuff. And I was writing around these events, trying to like not feel too helpless about it, but at times that's just like, you know, the feeling. But after, you know, I was new in Philly, and after writing all of these songs, I wasn't really ready to record them. I tried with the people I was playing with. I tried once. I tried again a year later with a different group of people. And I did a lot of recording at home, a lot of demoing. And so that was about 2 years of, you know, working on the record at home and at two different studio sessions. And then I hit like a really dark place where I decided I didn't want to play music anymore. It felt too selfish or something. Which I don't know if I can explain it right now, but I just wanted to do something else that felt like I could really give back to the world. And I don't know what it was. It made sense at the time, but it also didn't. I was just sad. I was really sad. And so I took some time off of playing music, and then, you know, the pandemic hit, and then about a year into the pandemic, my old bandmate, who I had recorded the second round of recordings with, Mike Cormier O'Leary, he was like checking in. He's like, "Yeah, how's it coming along?" And you know, he had checked in a few times, and every time he checked in, I was just like, "God, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's just bad. It's coming along badly. It's not happening." And then, you know, one day we got together. I had decided I'd moved to New York, and we got together in the city one day, and we're like out for coffee, and we're talking, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, I kind of want to get into like producing. It might be cool to produce a record for somebody." And I was like, "Oh, that's cool." And then like an hour later, I was like, "God, you know, I could probably do this record if I just like had someone help me produce it." And he's like, "Oh yeah, that's a good idea." And like my partner's there with us, and he's like, "You guys know you're just supposed to work together on this. Like, you want the same thing. You should just do this." So we were like, "Oh yeah, I'm like too oblivious, and Mike is too polite. And we needed somebody to tell us what to do." So then we're like, "Oh, let's do this." So we decided to, and he helped me kind of work through some of the songs that were making me feel like crappy. Like some of the songs I hated the most, I wanted to cut from the record. He took some of those, kind of reworked them a little bit. And then after hearing those songs were Look Like This, Break Up To, and Circle Circle, they just have this like really, I don't know, this energy that it's just different and exciting and fun. So yeah, after he did that and I heard what he had created, I felt like it was possible again to go back into the record and finish it. Yeah, so anyway, yeah. That's like the whole process. It's a long story, but we ended up going back to the studio, a third studio, at Big Nice in Rhode Island, and finished it with Brad there and some of my new bandmates from the city. And yeah,
cool.
Came together pretty quickly after that.
So what do you think looking back on it now? Like, there's been a bit of space since the release, and I'm sure you've reflected on it since its release, and you've had a bit of distance. What do you think about it now?
I feel great about it. I mean, I still feel proud of, you know, finally getting it out, first of all. I think the music, like, musically, I really like it. Like, the content of it, at times, I still feel like it's pretty strong, like, lyrically, but sometimes you know, there are parts of it that I'm just like, I cringe when I listen to it. It's just been a while since I wrote those songs. Things have changed, and then I feel like I'm writing differently now. That's how it always is. But yeah, I still feel proud of it.
Excellent. I would. It's a really, really solid release. I really love playing it. And typically I pull songs from albums, and this album I listened to through and through from start to finish, because I love the flow of it. I'm really happy that you finished this record. Not all things are linear in life, right? Sometimes there are twists and turns and the bumps and the smooths, and you figure it out. But I'm glad that you had that persistence to see it through, because the listener gets to enjoy it now. So I thank you for all the listeners out there. Well, again, thanks for joining me today. I'd love to just kind of know what's 2024 looking like for you. What's this year hold for Strawberry Runners?
Well, I'm feeling pretty excited about 2024. Mm-hmm. Next month I'm going to the UK. And I'm not sure when this podcast is going to come out, but I'll be there March. I'll be playing shows there March 14th through 23rd-ish. Cool. And then in this, you know, when I get back, I have a bunch of songs that I'm ready to record. But, you know, it's just about, like, I think I need to do it at home because it's, like, financially easier. But, I want to get started on that, like, really dig in. Mm-hmm. And then I'm hoping in August I'll be able to pull together a little West Coast tour. Because I'll be over there anyway. And maybe some more like Northeast dates in the spring, like May or so.
Cool. Yeah. So the train is still chugging down the tracks.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
I'd like to say full steam ahead, but it's just like, oh my gosh, money is real thing.
Well, being a musician on top of it too is not an easy task, because I know that you're probably shuffling a job and everything else up in the air as well. It's a tough thing. You know, one last question, because I tend to ask this question. I mean, what keeps you doing it? Like, because of that struggle, what is it?
I just love it. It gives me like... it is like a language that I speak, you know. It's like, why do you continue speaking the language that you speak? It's just the easiest one. And it's like, I'm best to express myself this way. And I don't know. It just makes me feel good.
That's great. Well, thanks so much again. This has been a real treat. It's really interesting to hear your timeline and the ups and downs, and it all comes out in your record is beautiful. Truly, your music is just, I really loved it. And I'm going to listen to every record of yours right after this call.
Oh God. Oh no. Oh God.
The demos, everything.
All right.
So thanks again. This has been a real treat. I really appreciate you joining me today.
Thanks, Chris. It was great to talk with you. Take care.
You're a typhoon, you're a sandstorm, your heat could keep the Great Lakes warm. Staying up all night last June. grass and the sassafras trees and the yellow wood. Open up the old dots and kick up some dust on the wall. You said I gotta get out.